So there's a quote that I know has been attributed to a lot of different people over the years that is basically paraphrasing here, like, if I would have written a shorter letter if I had had more time. Because people know it takes a lot to get ideas succinct and simple and basic and clear. And so I thought I'd challenge this team with this up here. We're calling it one-word wisdom. So I'm gonna propose a couple questions to them. They're gonna write out their one word, and then we're gonna talk about it. And as I say these questions, think about what your one word might be. So Deb was a little worried that these questions were gonna be boring. So I promised her they wouldn't be. So to get the markers warmed up, write nice and big on there. Who's your favorite one-word musical artist? Everybody think about this. You can't say Duran Duran because that's two words. So you got yours? Who's to flip it around? Who's you got?
Sorry.
Swiftie. Well done. Well done. Deb? Elton? Well done. Adele. Perfect. Well done. Good, good warm-up exercise here.
Yeah.
Okay. This one, to show this wasn't too scripted, I actually got off of LinkedIn yesterday because
God.
someone wrote about this great, like, facilitation questions. What's one word to describe your favorite sound? What's the one word, a word you can think of that describes, like, your favorite sound, the sound that you just love to hear? Again, this is get it working. Neil was pretty quick on
Mine
that.
is go.
Ah,
What you got, Philippa?
So I have a ping on my phone, but it's a special ping. I couldn't, there's only one word, but it means it's time for bed.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I struggled with this. I've gone swoosh.
Oh.
And that's. But actually, it's not a great word to describe. The sound I love to hear is the sound of waves hitting
Yeah.
the beach. It's like
Well
swish
done.
doesn't really do it, but
Yeah.
that is
It does.
probably my favorite
See,
sound.
when I thought of it, I heard of more like swish, like basketball, when that ball goes
Okay.
through the net. Like, that's a
Yeah.
little bit more of your goal. Anyone
Yeah.
else think of any sounds that they thought of that they love? What was that? Pop, related to? Oh, well done. Good. Any others? No, everyone went blank. All right. Okay, now we'll get into it. So why don't you both, each of you, quickly go through, introduce yourself and your roles at your organization, and we'll start with Deb over there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah Copeland. I am Internal Communications Director for the BBC. Been there coming up 3 years, actually, which has been a journey and very exciting. And we are responsible for the whole suite of internal communications and engagement. And we also, quite unusually, actually, we also run the employee survey in our team as well.
Thank you.
That enough?
Yep, perfect.
Thanks, Deb. I'm Philippa Weir. I head up global employee experience for AGCO Corporation. Some of the brands you might recognize are Massey Ferguson Tractors, Bent, Valtra. And I'm responsible for listening, onboarding, and culture. A lot of culture, not all of it, a lot of culture, and general moments that matter.
Well done.
A lot of those.
Neil.
Hi, everyone. I'm Neil Jenkins. I head up corporate communications at Iron Mountain. We are a global information management services company. We are a small team of seven, including Helena, who's here, and Joe towards the back. And we are responsible for internal communications across a company of 26,000 employees in about 60 countries, as well as media relations and PR. So
Well
that's
done.
us.
Well done. All right, thank you. All right, now let's get into the real questions here. What one word describes the key trait employees need to survive in the future workplace? What's the one key trait? Need some, like, game show music or something.
I know.
Neil's deciding. Philippa, you had this one pretty quick. What's your one word?
So my one word is passion. So the reason I wrote that is yesterday we have a new employee onboarding network called NEON. And once a month we get together with all our new hires that come into AGCO. And we have guest speakers. It's kind of like forging connections, all those sorts of things. And we had a fantastic speaker yesterday called Benno, who heads up our R&D based in Marktoberdorf. And he was talking about, you know, when he goes to hire, he looks at qualifications, but he said, like, the 50% thing I really look at is passion. You know, really having that drive, that excitement. And then sort of about 30% is personality and about 20% is education. I'm not saying that everyone in AGCO has got any qualifications they have, but it's that passion and sense of pride which really drives, which enables, I think, employees to thrive in what is a very challenging marketplace right now.
And where does your passion come from?
So my passion, it's my personal question. I think I feel very connected to our purpose. Mm-hmm. We create farmer-focused solutions to sustainably feed this world, so a shameless plug, but it is a noble purpose, and it's one that I truly believe in. It's making a difference.
Yeah, all plugs should be shameless too, by the
yeah.
way. Deb, what's yours?
Mine is adaptability, if you can read that. I think we're doing a huge amount of this at the moment at the BBC. The pace and scale of change in any organisation is really, really significant. And I think for any employee to really thrive, they need to be open to that change and to be willing to be to adapt to the circumstances around them, to adapt to a new strategy, to a new way of working, and to be flexible in how they execute. And, you know, you do see in an organisation like ours, 100 years old, having been the monopoly for many, many years, always able to do things in that way and guarantee an audience for many, many years, we're not in that place anymore. It is very true of the BBC, but I think it's true of lots of organisations, that sense of actually, I need to flex, I need to change, I need to have an open growth mindset, really, really important.
Mm-hmm. And Neil?
Mine is another P word, positivity, and probably plays a lot to what you've just heard. I think employees need to approach the world of work with a glass half full rather than glass half empty approach.
How do you do that though, Neil?
It's tricky, but yeah. You know, if you are going to kind of move forward and you are going to respond to change, I think that's got to be your starting point. And then I think part of our role as communicators is to help them help to sustain that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot about the journey we've just heard about, and people are at their most receptive when they join, usually. That's your moment, and how do you kind of harness that as, you know, they stay with you and go through peaks and troughs of change in an organisation or what's happening to them personally. But I think if that's the starting point and you know, that's the first sort of instinct to what they're hearing, then I think that's a good place to be in.
And you think about where we are in this post-pandemic environment and what people had to do around positivity and adaptability over the last couple of years probably means a lot to that. Yeah. When I was thinking about this, the word that came to mind was trust. For me, around it, and recently I've heard this term called thick trust. I don't know if people have ever heard this term, but it's about trust that builds over time, and I think that's what got a lot of organizations through the start of this decade, was that thick trust that they'd built with individuals and carrying that forward. So thank you for going through that. The next one-word challenge here is what's the one word you think about when fostering employee growth? And even if it's your own growth, as an employee, I mean, Deb, you said you've been at BBC for 3 years. You worked somewhere before that. Neil?
I was at BT with Neil, actually.
There you go. That. But what's the one word that, when you think about growth of your own careers, that comes to mind? Mm-hmm. Neil was quick there, all quicker on this one. Getting greased up here. What you got, Neil?
It's another P word, personal. So I think every organisation or every manager who I've worked with or for has understood where I want to go. and taken time to understand that, and then that's enabled me to open doors in the direction that I want to go. And I think, again, the data at organisations' fingertips, their ability to sort of get to know their employees on a much more granular level should lead managers to be able to have conversations that are more personal to their teams, to their people, about the direction they want to go. So for me, I think, you know, the more you can make it personal, the more that that's recognised by the employee, mm-hmm. they're going to see the opportunities, and I'm a strong believer you own your own journey, but, you know, that's a big enabler for me.
Yeah, especially as we heard from Nicole and Cheryl and Mike, just that personalization yeah. of that journey yeah. is important. Philippa?
So my word is experience, and that's a smiley, happy employee. And the reason I put experience is that at AGCO we see a huge correlation, as I'm sure many of you do, between, you know, if you've got great employee experience, that leads to happy, engaged employees. They take pride in creating high quality, smart solutions which help to feed the world. And in turn, that delivers great customer experience. And when you've got happy customers, they choose to reinvest their dollars, their reals, their pounds, their euros back into AGCO. That means our financial performance goes up, and that means we can invest in our employees, whether it's in their personal development, across the employee life cycle. We're really hot on that, whether it's well-being, all those key moments that are so important. And in turn, that reduces churn. So it's a self fulfilling prophecy, but for us it's about getting the experience right.
Bonus points for the emoji.
Thanks.
It's there too.
Such an
Deb?
Mine, I think I might have spelt, I don't know, does it have two G's or one G? Looks wrong. Squiggly.
And explain that one.
Right, so Squiggly, so I don't know if you've heard of this company called Amazing If. They're a really brilliant, I guess, careers coaching organization. They have a book out, they have a really great podcast, really great sort of Insta profile, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually came across them at BT. We did some work with them there. And their whole ethos is, you know, it's kind of not the days are gone, but, you know, times have changed, and actually progressing your career and growth and development isn't always like this. Mm-hmm. You go all over the place. And it's about sort of trying to embrace that. Certainly in my career, I've always tried to embrace that, although I've always been in comms in one form or another. But those little bits of whether it was heading up a social media agency or running marketing in a firm or running, you know, a global inward investment organization, they've all come together to help me become the person who I am today. Mm-hmm. And certainly, and I think this ethos of Squiggly, we have really tried to take on board at the BBC, although it's not an official policy or anything like that. But basically, it's about, you know, we can't just endlessly promote people through the organisation. You know, we've got to develop our employees by giving them a breadth of experiences. And I have to say, the careers offer at the BBC, I have never seen one as good. Mm-hmm. So we have this thing called 80-20, where you can 20% of your week you can spend with another team. Teams will open up these opportunities. You keep your sort of main job, but you go and you work in another department. We have a program called Hot Shoes, which is more of a formal sort of 2 or 3 week program. You know, we had people who were doing Hot Shoes for Eurovision. We'll have people who are doing Hot Shoes and 80-20 for Glastonbury. Mm. So if you want to get into production, if I'm in a corporate, maybe a corporate role, and I think actually I want to do something more creative, we have set up these processes to do that. And it's exceptional. People get so much out of it and actually can end up in roles as a result. So I think our ethos, and certainly the ethos that I follow, is about embracing a range. And accept that it isn't always, you know, it's not a failure to not to go vertical and progress and become more senior. It's actually the breadth that's important.
Do you think that speaks to the BBC culture? Was that driven by the culture? Was that driven by the employees wanting?
It was driven by
both?
The employees.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out of the survey. You know, we have a couple of questions on career. We were not scoring well a few years ago, so we decided to focus on that. Very small, brilliant team of three people who sit in HR but who just run our careers offer, and they've developed these products, if you like, and they're brilliant, and they're so for everybody. And the other thing we do actually, sorry, is we do staff apprenticeships. So again, a really great way for people to take on new experiences, to grow their qualifications, it's so I think we've listened and responded really well, and we're really investing in that space.
That's amazing. I love that.
The thing for us is you know, we don't because we're a publicly funded organisation, we can't compete with the commercial sector on salaries. So we have to really think about the experience that people are getting and that development that people are getting, and exposure to things that only we can offer. We have to really kind of leverage that.
Philippa, you're going to add something?
No, I think it's great what Deb was saying, what they're doing at the BBC, and it's that sort of shift from sort of career path to career portfolio, where you've got a sort of range of opportunities which are opening up to many employees now within organisations, and this shift to that sort of skills-based organisation is certainly something we're looking at ACCO. But yeah, really good.
Mm-hmm. So we mentioned this word career a lot of times at organizations. Obviously speaks to people sticking around for a while at one organization. We know that doesn't always happen all the time. And when earlier today we heard about the values of employee retention, hanging on to the people that you hire. So what's the one word that comes to mind for thinking of what's that effective strategy for retaining your people? What's the one word that comes to mind for keeping your best people around? And you can't say squiggly again.
I won't.
I like that word.
That's a good word, though.
It is a good word.
And I don't know if there's two G's or one in it either, actually.
I just felt like it looked wrong, but anyway.
Neil, you're done quick again.
Yeah, I've gone for values. I think if people who tend to stay longer, I think, find that there's a connection between their personal values and the company's values. And companies that I think place emphasis on values as part of their proposition, part of their story, and that shows up, you know, in day-to-day behavior is what makes people hang around.
This isn't a test because I don't know them, but what are the core values at Iron Mountain? Like, what are the things that you would use to describe those values?
Safety-focused, accountability, focus on customers, taking ownership, and just building inclusive teams. Those, I think, have I got that right?
Fair enough. I got a thumbs up out here, yeah.
Yeah, and the safety one is huge. We're, you know, 75% of our organisation are in operational roles. So, you know, the number one thing is to make sure people go home every day safely. And that safety and security extends to the information we look after for our customers. You know, taking accountability is, you know, knowing what you are responsible for and doing it. Customers is why we exist, and, you know, it's at the heart of our purpose. And that whole piece around inclusion is just so important. You know, everybody, you know, we want people to feel they can show up, they can belong, they can bring ideas and fresh perspectives that aren't going to just get dismissed. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, if you put that through the lens of what people are looking for in a company or a career, there's probably, in not the same words, but the same sort of attributes, mm-hmm. there'll be a personal value in there. And if you can make that connection, people go, oh yeah, I can see myself here, because mm-hmm. that chimes.
Mm-hmm. And not just here, but staying here. Yeah. Philippa?
So at ACCO, word would be listening, and now our happy employees.
You've added ears to the emoji.
Got big ears now. So when we talk about listening at ACCO, we are very committed to a listening program. We call it Voices, and we started this back in 2021, and it was fairly Corinthian when we started. We're about 30,000 employees strong. We sort of brought in about 6,000. Since then, we've opened up to shop floor. A lot of that is thanks to First Up. We've been able to reach our shop floor workers. We've got about 15,000 around the world. We also suspend production lines. We put in kiosks, so they actually come in and they can share their voices. But for us, it's not just about the listening, it's about acting on what employees are telling us. So it's about, we talk a lot about employee-driven business change. We listen right across the employee life cycle. We do it segmented, so we're not over-surveying. But the big one in November is our sort of, that's the one. That's the one that gives us our North Star. And that's where we can look at all the indexes. It's about 70 questions long, but it's about pay and benefits. It's about learning and development. It's about DEI, sustainability, all the things that matter across the employee life cycle. Then we can understand what employees are telling us, and then we can actually match that up accordingly with the right actions and constantly feed back on what we're doing to make those changes. That's important.
What are the other ways you listen other than that big survey you talked about? But what are the other ways that you listen to employees?
So, well, obviously we've got data coming into First Up. We have snow tickets. We have our HR information system. You know, the one thing we've noticed this year, I've got water coming in our ears. We talk about the data lake. So now the piece for us is actually connecting the dots and bringing all that data together to deliver meaningful insight to our employees and our, you know, our leaders. So for example, we've just stood up one of the employee journeys, again through First Up, on onboarding. Happy to talk to anyone about that, but we're taking the data from that. We do an onboarding survey. We're seeing the engagement that we're getting in First Up. We've just launched it, so it's early days, but that's where we can drive continual improvement.
Deb?
I guess maybe a bit of an obvious one, but mine is purpose. Purpose for people who work at the BBC is just the absolute core of what we're about. As I said earlier, you know, we can't really compete on salary. So people join the BBC because they believe passionately in public service. They believe passionately in our mission to inform, entertain, and educate. Mm. And they see the impact that the work that we do can have on society. And I think, you know, now more than ever, as we look at this in this post-pandemic world that we were talking about, this post-truth world, the role of the BBC is more important than ever. So we talk about our purpose a lot. We talk about the impact that we have on society, about our role. And it isn't like, you know, oh, it's really shit to work here, but we have a good purpose. So, you know, we really care about all of that other stuff as well. Yeah, you have to kind of just get on with that, and because, you know, that is the driving force. I think, you know, many people that you talk to, they are passionate about what it is that we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, we have to really give them an outlet to do that and take care of all of the other stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And make sure it's a good employee experience. But you know, we are in a very competitive landscape. So we are losing people to the Amazons of this world and the Netflix of this world, but we're also bringing some of them back. Mm-hmm. And then that's because, you know, we still have the reach and the influence and the impact on the creative industries that I don't think yet those, you know, the streamers have. Mm-hmm. So we trade on the you know, being the number one media brand in the UK and actually one of the most trusted brands in internationally as well. That is the thing that attracts people to us and keeps people with us.
Yeah, when I spoke, your colleague Emily is speaking later
today. She is,
when,
yeah.
When I talked to her on the phone, that spoke through and everything she talked about.
Yeah, well, she is in our news team, and my goodness, I mean, that team are at the front line of all of that stuff.
And literally, in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, thank you for those.
It's interesting. I just want to pick up on Deb's point about coming back to the BBC. So they're boomerangers. It's a term well known, but we have a lot of boomerangers coming back to AGCO. So it's like, why are they coming back? You know, so it's looking at the exit data and trying to send, you know, if they decide to leave, sending them off with a positive experience. So you've got that ambassadorial aspect is a really important piece for us. But yeah, the boomerangers.
Fantastic. All right, ready for your next one?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What's the one word that sums up how to effectively communicate change in an organization? Sometimes it's like it's only change that's happening out there, but how do we get effective with communicating change? Oh, they're quick on this one. Deb, why don't you go first this time?
All right. So mine's Involve. We've done loads of work on this, actually. So when I first started, I mean, we're changing all the time. It's constant. And I think it can feel quite relentless. So we've done a lot of work on the narrative of why we need to change, the external, the internal factors that are kind of driving that, how we're responding. But as well as that, so when I first joined, we and actually even last year we were doing this as well a little bit, you know, senior leaders would go off in a room and they'd come up with a plan for change, and then they'd gather together the team and go, da-da, okay, we're going to restructure you, and we're going to move you here, and we're going to do this, and by the way, there's going to be 10% less of you, and da-da-da, you know. And then they're surprised when people go, oh, that, like, I hate that idea, that's awful, and they respond really badly. So we've been doing a lot of work looking at the impact of that approach with how we can do it differently. So don't get me wrong, there are still the managers in the room thinking about what the options are, but actually what we do now alongside that is we engage with those teams much more readily. So we set out the challenge. It might be we've just done it recently with our big production operation teams. We've said to them, you know, we need to work more efficiently. We have in real terms, our funding has declined over the last 10 years. But we're also seeing areas of duplication, of kind of stickiness. You know, things aren't as smooth as they could be. We're doing things differently in different parts of the business. Actually, we think we can improve that. Tell us what you think. Mm-hmm. And they are... We've had so much good stuff.
It's part of the listening that she...
Totally, yeah. And then, you know, there's also some stuff going on about restructure and transferring people around here and, you know, maybe eventually getting a little bit smaller. But when we come to tell them that, we've taken them on the journey with us and they're just more open and they understand why. And it's really just transforming the way we transform. It's really
changing the way we change.
Yeah, it's making a massive difference. It's just, you know, like treat people like adults and bring them in a little bit, you know. And of course you have to keep some things confidential for a time, but I think there was always a huge nervousness about how much we could say and will people worry. And I think, you know, people, they are not stupid, you know. They know that we've had 2 years of flat funding, we've had 2 years of flat license fee, we've got an increase in the license fee that's coming, but it's not as high as we were expecting. That's leaving a hole. You know, we can't just keep doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So, we're just bringing them in and allowing them, empowering them to help us with the solutions. Mm-hmm.
Philippa?
So.
We got emoji?
No, oh. I've got the longest word. So I put hyper-personalization. I think it's probably two words, so I cheated, sorry.
Well, you wrote it as one.
Yes, just. I think this is a really important piece when communicating change. It's about empathy. It's about the why. It's about making it real, making it personal. You know, we understand this change is coming, but this is what it means for you. This is what you can expect. It's tone of voice. It's also about leadership, about trust. You know, making sure that you're as transparent as you can be. I've just found my microphone. It's hiding in my very old jacket. So it's about the transparency and the trust, but it's very much about the personalization of messages and making them meaningful.
Neil?
I would agree with all of that. I've used repeats because I think that's that's really important. And that's not just, you know, repeat the message, because I think everybody's probably heard from leaders they support or transformation. Oh, we've said that, we've told them, well, say it again.
Yeah.
Say it in a slightly different way, and say it in a way that means something, or say it in a way that takes people with you. Often these people, you know, when you get to the stage of starting to tell people about a change, they've been working on it for 6-9 months, so they know everything about it and they assume everybody else does.
Yeah.
And that's the start line for everybody, and often it's the finish line for the transformation team. So, you know, how do you kind of get on a repeat, rinse, recycle type phase so that everybody, you know, hears it again and again and again? And leaders should you know, be waking up in the middle of the night saying it to themselves, or they're dreaming it, you know. That's how often they should be saying it. And I think it just applies to all of the things that sort of sit around change and support change. Repeat how often you listen, repeat how often you ask, repeat the message, repeat it consistently. And I think, you know, people will then start to understand. And this isn't just about identikit messaging, because that's why we're here. We're here to make it different, to make it exciting, to make it engaging. But ultimately, you've got to help take people with you. And I think you can't just expect people will hear it, understand it, do it in one go.
Yeah. How do you repeat it without making it repetitive?
Yeah.
Because everyone thinks everybody paid attention the first time, the second time, the third time. But it might be the 10th time they heard it, but everybody else has been on that journey much longer.
Yeah.
So yeah, great one there. You know, in Mike's session, he talked about the number of apps. What was it, 200 plus systems, tools, apps that that people use? And those are the ones that we know about. There's obviously tools that people use, you know, off the side of their desk. What's the one word you would use to describe that goal of getting people to adopt new tech in your organization? You're rolling something out that's new. What's the one word you'd use to describe getting that adoption, knowing the landscape out there? All right, Neil, you were quick again.
Relevance.
You got a lot of R words today.
So I think this comes back to a lot of things we've been talking about. You know, what does it mean for me? Is this about me? Is it going to help me do my job better? Is it going to help me go home earlier? Is it going to mean I don't have to do 2 hours of admin on a Friday? That's the type of thing that I think brings people in, and it actually helps them do their job. Mm-hmm. And then anything else on top of that is a bonus. So if we can help people feel they're making a meaningful difference, but we're understanding what it is they're here to do, then that's, I think, the key.
Recognizing it could be one more thing, but here's why it's one more thing.
Yeah.
Deb, what's yours?
Mine's effort. Mm-hmm. I think we make people work too hard to get the information that they need, that we want them to have. And so I think I can really relate to all of those apps. I was thinking, God, I think we've got most of those on there. And how are people meant to know where to go and how to work with those things? You know, it's. I just think we are overcomplicating working life for people. And many of these things are designed to help productivity. But I think if you have too many and they're not well thought through and they're not thought about in a holistic way, they just overcomplicate and create too much effort. And I would love to think that, you know, my esteemed journalism colleagues are waiting for an email from the Director General to land in there. Well, actually, sometimes they are, depending on the topic. But, the reality is they're not. They're out there on the front line. They're busy, you know, producing packages to go on the news, and they're working to deadlines. So we have to think about how we help them get everything that they need when they need it. So I think that whole, the concept of personalization, but also where they are, when they need it, you know, is really, really important. So I would just like to see us make it effortless for...
The story that comes to mind when you were talking about that, and I don't know the validation of it, but it was basically that before laundry machines, people washed their clothes once a month.
Yeah.
Because it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Then laundry machines came out, and people started doing laundry once or twice a week. So the idea was it was creating less work for them, but it actually created more work for them, or they spent more time doing it. So to your point, how do we make it easier for people without it being more work with this new adoption?
Yeah, and we just create more communications, more stuff for them to think about and figure out, what does this mean? What do I need to know? What don't I need to know? So yeah, I think stripping that all back is really important.
Philippa?
So I sort of...
Oh, yes, I've got another emoji coming around.
There's an emoji.
Here we go.
So picking up what Deb was saying, KISS. So mine's about keeping it simple, stupid. I think from processes, burnout is real. I think there was some research that came out last year. I think it might have been Gartner. I'll find it and send it, share it through. That it does cause a huge amount of employee burnout and frustration. I mean, I have been reduced to tears with our expense system, and sometimes to the point I think I won't go there because I've got to do expenses, or I'll just bankroll it myself and just swallow it up. No, but all in seriousness, I think the simpler we can make it, it's going to back to what Nicole was saying about our, you know, we talk at ATCO about employee experiences with our processes being as seamless as our ones that we might have with Amazon or Netflix. Are we there yet? No. Are we making progress? For sure. And we're bringing in a lot of AI. So we have now Maisie, get it? So Maisie is our help desk chatbot on AI. So we can ask her a question and she'll run off and find the answer and she'll tell me where to find something or how to raise a snow ticket. And we've also just introduced Barney, again, opening the doors to forge connections, all a bit ag, sorry. I sit in HR, but I know nothing about it, so it's just hilarious. I just think imposter syndrome. But I think all of these, it's kind of like demystifying the AI piece as well as a really important one for us. It's just another way of presenting information and gathering information. So the more simple we can keep it with our processes, the better.
All right, the next one, the word's been mentioned a few times up here around efficiency. So on your teams, what's the one word you described of how you've created efficiencies for them? We're all trying to do more with the same or even more with less.
For the internal comms?
Yes, for your teams. How are you, what's the one word to describe how you're creating efficiency?
I have to look to Gav now. Gav, this is your one.
I have nothing to give.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
Explain. No, I was like, where are we going with this,
Deb? That's pretty good, Deb. I agree with that.
Well, we have this, we do try, you know, sometimes we say no, or not like that, or not this week, or, you know, there's a kind of, you know, you can do it in a nice way, but I think, like, educating the business a little bit about what employee communications is there to do, what should sit with our team as strategic communicators, and what actually they can do themselves. I think sometimes there is a, I'm sure you can all relate to this, like any communications needs to come through the internal communications team. And I go, no, you know, like actually you can write that email to those people, it's fine. So yeah, I mean, look, having really great systems, First Up Platform has been great for us. It's really helped us work in a much more efficient way. But being clear about what we are there to do and what we're not, because otherwise we could just tie ourselves in knots, getting involved in lots of what I sort of call low value, high volume work. Yeah. And that's not how we're going to make the difference.
Well, you said it's not maybe not just no, but it could be not now.
Not now, not like that, not, you know, Philippa? Not in that way.
So mine is empowering. So it's giving employees permission to play, and again, sort of First Up has enabled us to do that in many in many instances where we've got user-generated content, so it's more authentic. You know, we've got employees sharing their stories. You know, I mean, my idea for a Cats and Hats channel was actually kicked out by Gavin and the team, but and fair enough, it's a bad idea. But there's a lot of engagement from actually empowering employees, and as Deb says, you don't constantly have the tsunami of requests coming in, or we need a logo for this initiative, or we need that. It's like, no, we don't. Actually, you've got this great platform, you're empowered to use it, you can post content in, and that for us has been a bit of a game changer.
You sort of blew through this cats and hats thing quickly. What is,
I think we've got ATCO Pets, haven't we? We've got ATCO Pets.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's one of our topics.
Mine is focus, which is maybe a slightly politer version of no, but means the same thing.
What was yours, Neil? What was it?
Focus.
Yeah, I like that. Nicely put.
So I think this is important, and particularly for us, because we are a much smaller team now than we were 12 months ago. Mm. We've, you know, a lot of parts of the business go through change. We've been no different. And you know, as part of that, we have had to radically change how we support the business, with the business understanding we cannot do the same thing with fewer people. So they were very supportive in us changing our focus, but once we had changed it, we needed to make sure that we stick to it. And that's where we have created resources to help people help themselves. Mm-hmm. We have said, you know, we are still here, but we won't be hands-on as much as we used to be. We have said no directly to quite a few things. Mm. We have had some people who are just clinging on by their fingertips to the way things used to be done. But again, back to change, you know, repeat, repeat, repeat. This is what we're here to do. This is how we are now operating. This is what's available to you if you need something like that. And to be fair, the business has embraced that. And, you know, we haven't had as much pushback as I thought we may have had. And I think for our team, it's actually been liberating. It actually means we can focus on things that make more of a difference, that we actually enjoy doing. And I think the business is hopefully seeing the benefit from a more consistent approach, a more focused approach mm-hmm. as well. Early days still, but focus would be my word.
One word that has come up a few times, I mean, not as often as I thought, is culture. You talked about it a little bit with your values. What's the one word that comes to mind when you think about a strong organizational culture, or what builds a strong culture at an organization? What's the one word? It could be where you work now, what you see out in the marketplace, or just in your career. The one word that builds strong culture. Philippa, you were on. You were
on it. I've just worked out it's magnetic as well. I'm really special.
Oh my God, I'm doing that.
Some girls start. Thank you. So ours is leadership. Culture starts with leadership. It is a phrase that all of you will have heard in this room before, but we do stand by that at AGCO. We've invested quite heavily in culture over the past, was it 18, 24 months, Gav, something like that. So our leaders are super engaged with it. We have a network of culture champions to act as ambassadors throughout the organisation. And we've put in place, we kind of done away with our values, I think is a nice way of putting it. And we have cultural beliefs. So we have team up, speak up, and farmer first. And we weave that into our daily lives, like hygiene moments. So we'll start meetings with a sort of focused storytelling. We can give recognition cards based on our culture. But the most important thing with our culture is that we have North Stars with it. So with that, we have like three winning outcomes linked to our NPS, our engagement. They're all up here. NPS, engagement, and I've forgotten the third one, RONA. So that's our return on net assets. So that's our financial performance. So basically, happy employees, happy customers, and happy investors, because we're on the New York Stock Exchange.
Deb?
I struggled with this one, actually, because I find culture really challenging to get your head around and to affect change in culture. And I think lots of organisations do this. And lots of I've put curiosity. And the reason I've put curiosity is I think particularly at the BBC, but I think in lots of organisations as well, that sense of being open, of trying to look left and right and think about the impact of the way you are working, where you have dependencies, how you can work together, collaborate, I think that really helps build successful cultures. Too often, I think organisations mistake communications for culture and put in lots of initiatives and stuff that just creates more noise. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's about getting back to basics, right? So really understanding culture is about the way we do things around here, the way we get, how we work. It's about your values. But it's also about decision making and bureaucracy and whether leaders take accountability and do what they say they do. So we're on this big drive to actually just make culture much more accessible and day to day, because I think it can feel a bit nebulous and, you know, it's difficult to really shape it. And you get these people sort of navel gazing and worrying about things that actually, you know, people on the front line, they don't really care about that stuff. They go, like, you know, have I got the kit that I need? Do I know where I'm going and what job I need to do? Am I clear about my role? Do I feel as if I've got the support of my manager? Can I be my authentic self here at work? It's like simple stuff like that. And I think we can overcomplicate culture if we're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Neil?
I put people. So very simply, I think if you know, if you've got good people, you tend to have a good culture, and if you don't, you have a less good culture. And what I mean by this is, you know, you can very quickly spot the people who, you know, are really the heartbeat of an organisation, and who you want others to aspire to. And that's not always leaders. On Monday, Helena and I were at one of our warehouse and logistics facilities in the Midlands. We were given a 90-minute tour by somebody who's been with the company 17 years. She's in an onboarding and training role, and she is probably the most articulate person about the business I have met in the last 3 or 4 years. Mm. And I include our executives in that. You know, she answered every question meaningfully. She brought examples to life. She showed and explained the work we were doing at that site for our customers. Everything from big messages that we're used to hearing to, this is how it works minute by minute in this room. That's what makes a culture, and that's mm-hmm. who we need more of.
Mm. Yep. We've got just one more official question and then one more wild card inspired by Philippa here at the end.
oh no.
There's another, like you said, like culture, sort of this, I forget what, nebulous word.
I think that
that's a good one word.
Spell.
I think another one is, I think another one is employee engagement. It's also this, yeah. Some think of it as this metric, some think of it as at an organization level, some at the personal level. When you hear the phrase employee engagement, what's the one word that comes to mind? Well, I like Neil's already. We'll have you go flip it around.
Cringe. Because I hear it used and interchanged with so many different things. I've heard a leader say, I'm going to go and do some engagement now, and I am dying inside. I've heard it used to describe outputs or outcomes, and it's probably a bit of that or neither of those things. And I think its biggest danger is still that it's a score that people then chase, and it's not actually what we're looking for. You know, people too often fall into the trap of going, I've just got to increase that number the next time I survey, without looking at what that number means. Mm. So cringe is what I...
This is why you and I are friends. Philippa, what's yours?
So my word is, with the ubiquitous emoji, is belonging. But we measure, we put a bit of a science on employee engagement at ACCO. So we do measure it. I'd say it's one of our North Stars. We measure it through 4 questions, which are linked to satisfaction, likelihood of recommending ACCO, mm-hmm. so that's your NPS, your ENPS piece there, motivation and satisfaction. So, and we take that as an aggregate, but it's more than that. It's about purpose, it's about pride, it's about feeling that you can grow and develop within the organisation. And it's kind of like feeling like you belong amongst all these sort of fantastic moments that matter that we're continually creating across the employee life cycle. So for us, that's how we would view engagement.
And Deb?
I changed mine, I cheated a little bit.
I saw you did all...
Well, I had pride and I was a bit like, oh, you know. So I put value in the end, because I think it's about, you know, employees, colleagues feeling valued and the value that they bring to the organisation. And I think, you know, I share your view, Neil. But I think when you are feeling, you know what, this organisation has got my back, I'm doing really brilliant work, they care about me, I care about them, that sort of value chain is, it's a real sweet spot. Yeah. But yeah, our survey's launching at the end of this month, actually, and can't wait for the, you know, the agony over the results and the analysis and all of that, and the endless stream of programs that will come off the back of it.
Yeah.
I think you've just got to really be able to pinpoint on those things that deliver what employers are asking for and can unlock that value that they can bring back.
All right, so we're right on time. So here's your last one. Inspired by Philippa's artistry.
Oh, no.
Throughout this. When you hear first up, what's the emoji that comes to mind?
Oh, jeez.
And if you got to pull out your phone to look at emojis, you can.
I don't have it, but...
See what sort of artists Deb, you and Neil are.
I literally have a mental block.
Well, Neil was quick on this one. Neil, what's your emoji?
It's a big tick. So it's really made, you know, it has genuinely made a difference to how we communicate to our employees. We're an organization, you know, that is three quarters frontline. It makes a huge difference to us as a team, especially as a smaller team. We're more productive by, you know, essentially using the platform as the sort of central way of doing things, and it's really helped us consolidate how we do it. And I think the business is seeing the value now. You know, we've had good uptake, really good uptake, in fact. You know, we're, I think, overachieving in terms of the adoption rates we wanted at this stage. We're not even 12 months old yet. So so for us, it's made a big difference, but we're still in the foothills, you know. So Iron Mountain loves mountaineering type analogies. You know, we call ours peak, and we still need to aim for that in terms of, you know, how do we get even more out of the platform and also open the other parts of the business's eyes to what's possible.
If I remember correctly, when you presented last year, you had just launched that week.
We were about to.
We were about to, right around then.
Yeah, that's right. So,
Deb, what's yours?
A bullseye. I was thinking I could draw, does anyone remember that game show from, was it the 70s or 80s? Anyway, I'm going off.
Jim Bowie.
Anyway, I drew a bullseye. Couldn't draw that. I just think, look, targeted, but I think really helping us to hone what it is that we are about and the offer that we want to create for our colleagues. And, I think it's just, it's helping us achieve that focus that we want. You're laughing. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing at your.
You're changing yours.
Sorry, it's so bad.
Sorry.
All right, you're up. This is all inspired by you.
I can't even draw it either. So it's kind of a megaphone, but it's about communication. I did have a happy face, but it looked so evil. I had to take it out. I think it's happy, great communication platform for us at ACCO that has really transformed how we engage with our employees. So, yeah.
You erased her, as I say, do your check mark again and turn these all around so we can, we can see. I think that's a good description, actually. I was thinking about this of what you each thought of with the platform.
You could have this as your logo. Yeah.
We'll keep them, but we'll keep these up just like this. Can I get a round of applause for Deb, Philippa, and Neil? Yep, I'll take these from you. Yep.